Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guy. People's Radio. It's on the GM in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne Hoop. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will. The Ill Executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil T, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page, Eric.
RNG fam is like, woo.
Now, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
You don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners. You guys act like this. Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Anybody can be peachy.
Don't get no more realer. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys special edition, the funky editorial extended. We're going to keep it hot. Got something new for the fans out there, something for you guys to check out. This is a funky editorial extended. This is where we take the segment of the funky editorial and go deeper. We hit a couple of topics, but we get deep into them, about knee deep into them. All right, I got a couple of fellas here to help me out with this. As always, I got my right-hand man, D. Wills. Holler at the people.
And you got the hammer, a.k.a. Carl Hampton, the hammer.
And then I got the hammer, Carl Hampton, in the house. Carl's going to hold us down for this episode of the Funky Editorial Extended. We're going to jump right in to the piece of the show that we call the intro to let you know. Now, in this particular segment, we let you know what we got going on for the night. But tonight we're going to hit you off with some NBA talk, and that conversation may take a while. See, D. Wills and I have been going back and forth on a few key elements to how we see the league and how we talk about certain teams in the league, and, you know, we got to hash this out, and we felt like there was no better place to do this. We've been going back and forth over text. There's no better place to do this than right here over the air, so you, the listeners, can also enjoy and listen as we go back and forth, and hopefully you hear some poignant points. Then we're going to hit y'all with some NFL football talk, talking about the coaching hiring process, the Rooney Rule. We're going to talk about Colin Kaepernick and this new wave of pistol quarterback. Is it a gimmick? Is it something that's permanent? We're going to get into that and give you our perspective on it. And then we have the final word. This is where we're going to summarize our different points of view for you guys tonight, so you walk away knowing exactly where we stand on these topics. At times it may be heated, at times things may get contested, but all the while, we're going to keep it real. So, my man D. Wills, you in the house yet?
Yeah, I was. When you called me, I was clearly trying to abstain with my silence because I know we're gonna be arguing this NBA thing, and I just wanted to just stand silent and strong. But we got the hammer in the house, so I'm ready to go.
I'm ready to go, homie.
Well, let's get right into it. All right. So talking about the NBA, talking about the state of the game. First question I'll ask is, I'm gonna welcome in the hammer. The hammer is new to the RS family out there. He's new to the listeners, so we're gonna bring him in right away and let him lay it down. You know, this is like in a game when you get the new guy on the team, you gotta call a couple plays for him, get him in a rhythm. You know, let him get his sweat going so he feels a part of the action. So we're gonna get Hank going. I mean, my man Carl going the hammer. We're gonna get the hammer going right away. So, hammer. All right. What are your general feelings on the state of the NBA right now, as of today, looking big picture? How do you feel about the league?
The state of the NBA is as raggedy as it was before Magic and Bird came in, man. The quality is bad. So we got some high-profile players in the league, but, I mean, the bottom line with the one-and-dones coming in, the international players are soft. The NBA product is not there anymore, man. You got a lot of teams who shouldn't even be in the league. The Clevelands of the world, Sacramento's, you know, the Bob Kitties, you know. It's a disgrace, man. Some of these people like Jeff Adrian is in the league. I mean, I see Dan Gazzarik's back in the league. And I lived in Milwaukee for a while. He's garbage. You got Mike James back in the league. You got these 15-man rosters when they used to have 12-man rosters. And you know, I just can't. I mean, the most entertaining segment of the NBA is the pregame. You got a problem in the NBA, man. And you got some good teams out. You know, like LeBron and you know my hometown Bulls. They doing it without D Rose, and you know they're up and down. You know, obviously OKC's doing their thing, but man, I mean the quality is just raggedy because you got these kids coming in. One and done's, they don't know how to play basketball, man. I mean, it was better when they did 2 years, 3 years, but one and done, and the fundamentals aren't there. It's just a sad product. And I mean, I watch my Bulls religiously because I'm a Chi-Town guy through and through. But I'm telling you, if any other games are on there besides where I'm with my homies and watch the Bucks, because they're locals, you know, they're from. But you know, I watched the Bucks game, but the other game, man, they blew like a 20-point lead because they just, I mean, they got garbage on the roster, man. All these one and duns, Tobias Harris is the world, and it's just sad to see the state of the NBA right now with expanded rosters, the D League, and just the talent is just not developed there, man. I mean, for every Kyrie Irving you have a has been to beat. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just sad.
couple points that I'm gonna kind of counterpoint on. One thing I'm gonna agree with you on. I do agree that there's way too many teams, and this is something that we've laid out on this show. You know, when the NBA was locked out, we each came up with a plan, and we presented the plan to the listeners out there on what we would do if we could come up with a new CBA. And I think in one of the few things we were all in agreement on was contracting about 6 squads. I think we were all pretty
That's
much
minimum,
consistent.
Bro. That's minimum. That's minimum. That's
big. Exactly. In consensus that the league needed to be about 24 squads max instead of 30. And I definitely agree with you on that point. One point I'm going to have to disagree with you on a little bit is singling out the one-and-dones. Your favorite team is the Bulls, and their best player is the one-and-done.
Our best player is not playing right now, so it's not.
Yeah,
but our best player,
done.
We might not know if he'll come back, so I can't say that. I mean, but you're right, there's another one-and-done's Luol Deng, but, you
right.
know, but the bottom line is that for every Luol Deng, man, you got, like I said, he's not one, but you have a lot. I mean, the bottom line is the one and done's just aren't developed basketball wise, man. I mean, you don't look at the cats that come in the league this year, the Ben McLemores. You know, these kids aren't ready, man. They're not ready to ball. You know, they're not ready emotionally, like the DeMarcus Cousins of the world. acting like a baby up in Sacramento, aka now I guess Seattle. So, you know, I could name a whole bunch of one and dones. I could name people like Westbrook who stayed two leagues. I mean, obviously 2 years. Obviously, Durant's a special talent.
Is that the league, or is that the fact that college basketball is not worth anything anymore? I think it's the fact that college basketball sucks.
Yeah, college basketball is watered down too. Because you're right, and that's a very good point, Marcus. Because I can't even watch college basketball anymore because the quality is so bad, man. I mean, you guys.
Because for every Hashim to beat, I mean, there's a 4-year dude who sucks. There's a cold, true. You know what I'm saying? Who guys who stay four years and they're terrible. You know,
he had to stay 4 years. He had to stay.
Exactly. Yeah, so I think it's a double-edged sword because. You know, for every Hashim to beat, there's a Chris Washburn or a Joe Barry Carroll, too, from back in the day.
Joe Barry Carroll could ball. I mean, that's what one of my boys know.
He didn't play well in the NBA, though.
Look at Joe Barry, but Washburn, sadly, the cocaine monkey got him. So, I mean, he could have been a great player. But, you know, that powder, man, he was praying to that powder every day at night. And so, you high as a kite, man, you know, back in the day, it was like 25 teams. You couldn't be sleeping like you can now. You can't be sleepwalking, so you know what I'm saying. But Washburn was straight up. I mean, you got that much money, and you can't get off it, man. You know you got a problem.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Definitely
some interesting points in there. You know, you're talking about the average age of a player in the league has really come down. Where I think there was a time where you know, guys were entering their prime at 26, 27. Nowadays, for some guys, that's their eighth, ninth year in the league. You know, 26, 27 years old, you know, those guys looked at it kind of approaching the end of their career now. You know, when you talk about guys like Josh Smith and Rudy Gay, where in the past, in the 80s, those would have been young players. Nowadays, they're seasoned, grizzled, you know what I mean?
Josh and Rudy, great player. I mean, Rudy played what 2 years and left. I mean, Josh
came straight out of high school.
He came straight out of high school, but I mean, Josh is a beast. I mean, Josh, he's a stat filler. He's one of the best players in the NBA, as far as I'm concerned. As far as the rebound, I mean, he just fills up the stats, man. I mean, really, ATL. I wish he could get out of squad, man, like a real squad that he could win a title because he's a stat filler. I love him on the Bulls, you know, really, over Luau Deng, shoot. Real tough. So.
You take him over Luau? Oh,
yeah. Yeah, man, Luau's soft, man. People love the Luau, Luau's soft, man. I mean, I'm a Chi-Town, but I just tell it like it is. Luau's hurt all the time. He's soft. He's got the immense talent and we had a chance to get Kobe Bryant, for God's sake. You know, obviously at the nadir of his career when the alleged rape charges came out, but you going to tell me Luau Deng was that good? No, man. Luau Deng is
not
bringing
it, man. This is something that we've covered extensively on our show. We have what's called the Luau Deng theory of offensive consistency.
That's right.
And if you're familiar with the show, you know we talk about Luau all the time and how at that exact moment in his career, I think he was in his second year, and he was given 17-7 a night. And the Bulls brass and the Bulls fans were all hyped up about Luau Deng because it looked like this young guy who was going to keep getting better and keep growing. And after 2-3 years, he was already giving you 17-7. You figured, you know, by the time he hits his peak, he's going to be a 25-10 guy. You know what I mean? That's what the general thought was. So when it came time to trade for Kobe. It's like, oh, we'll trade for Kobe, but not if we got to throw in Luau Deng.
Yeah.
Asinine right
and that,
now.
That's why the Bulls haven't won a title since 99. No, nothing, you know. I mean, again, Luau's not great. He's a great basketball player. He's not a great athlete. Like Josh Smith is a great athlete. Not necessarily the best basketball player.
What people don't understand, and this is where the Luau Deng theory comes in, is that Luau Deng is one of those athletes who, no matter what situation is, what the situation is around him, what situation he is in, he is always going to give you certain production, no matter what system you put him in. You put Luau Deng as your option, he's going to give you 17 points and 7 rebounds.
That's
right. If you have him as your number 2 option, he's going to give you 17 points and 7 rebounds. If he's your number 3 option, he's going to give you 17 points and 7 rebounds. If you look at his stats today, what is he averaging? I bet it's 17 and 7.
Yeah, about that. He's been the number 1 option this year because obviously Rip's hurt and
exactly.
You know,
and
up
that's
and
what
down.
He's going to give
like,
you.
No, like I said, Luau's a good player, but Luau's.
Yep, and that's what you're always going to get from him. The key is you can't fool yourself into thinking he's going to become more than that. And that's what the Bulls did early on. They thought he was going to become more than that instead of just seeing him for what he was, a 17 and 7 guy.
Let me jump in here. I want to attack the point because I think Hammer makes some interesting points. But I would say the past few years, and I finally got NBA pass, I think I've been excited about watching the NBA because the playoffs have never been more competitive. The energy around it has been good. The superstars that we have in
so
the
bottom
league.
Line is that you don't watch the first 82 games of the season when you watch the playoffs.
No, I watch every night. And
you talk
I'm
about
saying
the
right
playoffs,
now,
bro. You talk about the playoffs.
Like,
you talk about the playoffs, homie.
But for every Bobcat team, the Golden State team is
Bobcat. Don't call them cats.
The Golden State team is balling. You know, if you think about Minnesota, you take away Love's injury, that's a nice squad. If you think about Portland's making some, that's a nice squad. I like the pieces they got. Even Utah got a nice squad, is watchable. So yeah, there's some teams, but that's been true throughout the history of the NBA. Back in the day, it was the Clippers.
But it's gotten worse
back
now,
the, back,
it's
back,
gotten worse. I mean, I can't watch Sacramento.
The Clippers were bad for about 15 years.
That's true, and they turned it around, and they got Chris Paul,
the Nets were terrible back then.
They're terrible now. Well, they're playing better now, but I mean, they were terrible at the beginning of the year.
You always had terrible teams. You had a concentration.
You had terrible teams with no personality now.
As much as I'm a 80s fan and I love the 80s, it still was basically Detroit, Boston, L.A., Atlanta at times in the early 80s through Dominique's years, but it was about 4 or 5 teams.
But yet the quality was better because, like y'all said, there were less teams, and then when they started watering down
the
league,
Look at the stars on Memphis. Those players are playing.
They're about to break
up. Look at the stars on the Clippers. Those players are playing.
Their best player won't sign an extension, huh?
But look at the quality of the squad. New York squad is balling.
New York
squad
is balling. And I think that's Winston. Winston's a great coach. And I think
even the 76ers with. With the craziest big man since
He hasn't played. He's ghost.
That's what I'm saying. But that squad is still playing tough.
They're
the Bobcats problem is not the Bobcats. That's Michael Jordan. That's your boy.
My boy's a great basketball player, but he's the worst exec ever. That was one of the worst hires I've ever seen, man.
The Bobcat stuff is about Jordan.
I'm not going to defend the indefensible. Michael Jordan's the worst owner ever. He picked Adam Morrison. Enough said.
That's it. You said Cleveland. Cleveland team is hot. Right now, in terms of the players, that's up to come. That's the team I'm buying.
But Bershaw being out hurts them. But, yeah, Kyrie's a beast. Kyrie's a baller. I mean.
But even Zeller, some of the other pieces, from the Syracuse, Waiters.
He's a nice baller off the bench. Maybe it could be a Ricky Pierce type. Fill it up. But the bottom line is the character's not there because, again, the league is watered down. Like I said, If you got Dan Gazarik in the league, if you got Michael James, had two 10-day contracts, now got a full season guarantee. You got.
But how's that different than John Konkak and
Konkak will give you 10 boards, man. Now, no question.
Look at
Collison. Collison, I mean, you know, Collison's not that great of a ball player, but he's an energy ball player. Konkak wasn't a bad rebounder, wasn't a bad block shot, man. Yeah, and you're talking about back then, that was like, 25 teams. Konkak would have been decent now. Obviously, he wasn't worth that contract he got. That was crazy.
$1 million.
You telling me Nick Collison is better than Konkak? I don't think so. Nick Collison has made a nice career for himself, but Nick Collison's an average player, man.
Hey, somewhere, Mr. Thompson, PhD's father's neck is burning right now because somebody mentioned John Konkak.
God bless John Konkak. He got paid, man.
He got paid.
You know, the Pistons gave him the offer sheet, and Lamb was suckers, and they matched it. So
here's the question.
Will, but your Pistons got played on that one, homie. They got
played. Here's the question I want to ask next. What does it take to win in today's NBA? Because D. Wills and I went back and forth about this. Charles Barkley, over the weekend, made some comments during the Clippers game. I think the Clippers were playing the Suns, and he made some comments to the effect that he wasn't sold on the Clippers yet because Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan weren't major threats on the low block, and they weren't consistent guys you can consistently get the ball to, and they could get to a basket. And I'm going to let D. Wills kind of give his perspective on the comment, and then I'll give my perspective on the comment. And then, Hammer, I want you to come in and let us give us your take on the whole situation. So, D. Wills, I'm going to give you the floor first.
Well, my thing is, like anything in basketball, the high percentage wins. As you get to the playoffs, you're going to have fewer possessions. Every possession counts. The more that you can execute going towards the hoop and create open shots is better. And what I would say is that you need to have a post game. And I think what we evolved in our conversation is maybe it's not the traditional center, but I think in this context, what you think about the Clippers, the best post threat in terms of evolving the game are the two big men for the Clippers. But you got to have something going to the hoop, forcing the double team, creating the ball movement to get the easier shot. I think that's important, whether that's you posting your guard, like Sam Cassell, or whether you posted LeBron to be a threat. It may not be every possession, but the ability to do it. I say having a good post in the fourth quarter is like running the football. You're either going to go to the line, or you're going to get an and-one, or you're going to score. And I think people like Jordan and folks like that realize how important the post game does to controlling the ball late in the game. So that was my thing is that you got to find a way to score 10 to 17 feet going to the hoop on a consistent basis to put pressure on the defense. Or are they going to push you to the perimeter and you're going to be taking ill-advised shots with the clock going down, and teams that can do that have a better chance.
Okay, and I'm going to agree with you in the sense that, yes, you have to be able to figure out how to get high-percentage shots in the fourth quarter to win in the playoffs. Because that's the only – nobody cares about regular season winning because most nights cats ain't showing up anyway and they ain't playing that intense. It's 82 games. We get it. You got to have a system and a way to get efficient half-court looks. Now, what I think is a bit antiquated and a bit old school is not relevant today is the fact that you think you have to have a guy you can dump the ball into on the block. And the reason I say that is because the game has changed so much, one, where you can play zones and how that limits a lot of the opportunities you can get on the block and allows double teams to come much quicker than they had to come from in the past, where it can negate some of that action where a good post player is going to wind up kicking it out anyway. The key is execution. If you can execute, you can get those high percentage shots. And the teams that can execute, whether they have a post option or not, you know, you talk about Miami last year winning a championship. They didn't win the championship because during downstairs they were dumping it into LeBron. They won a championship because of the spacing that they were allowed to play because they were playing small. And because they were playing small, LeBron had a big on him. And because he had a big on him, whether it was Ibaka or whether it was Durant or someone, he had someone with some size on him. He was able to take that player out with his still with his dribble. Spoelstra got him with his dribble at the top of the key and allowed him to go one-on-one. And the reason that worked is because back in the day, the reason they would throw the ball into a Ewing, into an Akeem late in the game, is because there were two results that you could get from doing that. One, you get a high percentage look. Two, you get free throws. Nowadays, because of the rules and how you can't put your hands on perimeter players, you can get those same results by having a strong ball handler, a guy who can get to the rack, who is hard to keep in front, is hard for defenders to keep in front of him. Because he can get those same things. He can either get an easy bucket or he can create for others, or he can get to the free throw line because of the way they're calling the game. And that's what Miami did down the stretch. Their best fourth quarter offense was clear it out, LeBron at the top, go and attack. That was their best offense at the end of the game because you can't touch the dude. You can't put your hands on these guys anymore. So that's where I think the rules have changed where it doesn't really help. It doesn't really make it a necessity to have that guy. If you have that guy, great. That is going to put you over the top. Because when we go down the list of so-called contenders right now, there isn't a team that really has that guy. How many? Carmelo hit 9 threes the other night. You know what I mean? The guys are playing on the perimeter more. LeBron, you go to the Heat. He's still, again, unstoppable force going to the basket. You talk about OKC, no post presence whatsoever. Durant's still a catch-and-shoot cat. He's still off-the-bounce shooter cat. He is very crafty, and he can still get baskets within that 17-foot range, very skilled within that 17-foot range. But he's not posting cats up. And that's what I mean. Like, the game has evolved to a point where a couple years ago when Dallas won, Dirk was posted. He was getting the ball with 17 feet, but he was turning around and up. He was turning around facing up, and it's the skill level. You don't have to be a dump it in, back to the basket, pound the guy back, jump hook. Dirk was catching it, facing up, shooting leaners, off balance jumpers. That's where the skill is now. And you don't. And they, I mean, they Dallas had nobody who you would dump it into, not a one.
But I would say that
who you would get the ball to and clear out on the low block.
But I would say that Dirk went to the post enough to make you think. Even LeBron. LeBron went to the post. The difference between this year
and that year. He wasn't posting on the low block. Dirk was posting 15 feet out.
But I'll tell you, even when you
looked
at the
Lakers. He was hitting the ball at the
elbow. When you looked at what I told you, really, 7 and 10 in. But even with the zone, the best way to beat the zone is have somebody who can flash to the middle and score. That's the best way to put a pressure on the zone. And so part of that is what I would say is, good big still be good small.
But the problem is there are no bigs.
But
that's
what
I'm saying. To make that as a criteria doesn't make any sense because nobody has that. Somebody's got to win.
I'm going to tell you the reason why Tim Duncan is still eating is he's good big eating.
Why are the Lakers not winning? They got the quote-unquote best big in the league.
Because they're not using it.
How is that working out?
Because they're not doing what I'm telling them to do it. You notice when they slowed the ball down and doing it exactly what they did. They won their last two games, including beating Oklahoma City.
They win a couple of games every couple of weeks, and people think they got it figured out, and then they lose five in a row.
But when they were winning, they did exactly what I said to do. When they were winning, they did exactly what I'm talking about.
And again,
and
with today's big man, you couldn't even play Dwight Howard in the fourth quarter of a championship series. You couldn't play him in the last 2 minutes.
But the thing about it,
you might as well get the ball back.
But you can put Gasol down there, and he can and Howard.
They don't even like Gasol.
Huh?
They don't even like Gasol.
That's the problem. The problem why Gasol's not doing it is not because Gasol's not doing it. It's because the Lakers' problem is their management. But what I'm talking about works.
I'm not denying that it works.
Good defensive teams, and we've seen this against Durant, good defensive teams will push him farther and farther away from the hoop. He's still soft in the behind. So, yeah, he'll start at 17. By the time he's done, he's shooting for 23. If he can make it, that's cool. But if all he does,
you know what kills the defense? Any defense? Because by the nature of defense is you're in a reactive state. What kills good defense is excellent execution. That's why San Antonio is always good, because they execute. If you execute, it doesn't matter what the defense does, what they try and take away, what they try and do to you. You have every offensive system is designed that if you take this away, you're giving us this, because you can't take everything away defensively. It's just not possible.
Which I understand, but even like in San Antonio, the key to that over their time that's been there is the big fundamental.
Yes. We cannot use the White as our example. We can use the big fundamental as our example. Even though he has been clearly, if not the best, one of the top two or three best big men in the game, San Antonio has consistently won in a regular season, but has not been able to consistently win in the playoffs.
Let me ask you this question.
Over his career, they have not been able to win back-to-back. They have won championships.
Let me ask you this question.
So this is my point. This is my point. Is that
let me ask you this one question.
You don't have to have that dude to win.
What I'm saying is, if Blake had a post game, what do you think he would be?
He would be better. Yes, absolutely.
No, if Blake had a post game, you know he would straight up dominate. You know that. He would be virtually unstoppable.
There are no post players. Because there are no post players, which is proving my point. This is the point I can make when people talk about the value of guys like Dwight Howard. This is why they're not so valuable, because you don't need them every night.
But this is what great players do. Because that's an issue, they end up actually making that happen. They would see that as an advantage, and they would take advantage of it. If you are a great player, you would not let that advantage go.
Right, and he's getting there. He's getting there. He's learning the same way LeBron is stepping out learning. Again, this is learning. They're in like post moves 101, and yet they're trying to perform it against pro defense. But they're trying to perform it against pro defense, which is going to take some time, because these aren't guys that have honed post moves throughout their career. These ain't Kevin McHale. This isn't the Dream, who had post moves upon post moves because he had been playing in that spot. And this is something we're going to continue to see as you see bigger guys playing on the perimeter, which as a guard, I can't live with that. They got to go down there and earn their money and on the block.
And what I would say is you're getting 6'10", 6'11
guys who haven't really learned how to play on the block. Because nowadays, which I think is a good thing, is that we teach them how to play basketball and we don't teach them how to be big. Because, he's 6'5 in eighth grade, he might stop growing. Who knows?
Back
in the day, if you were 6'5 in eighth grade, you were on the block and you were going to go through your post reps.
That part I would agree with you. The reason why I would, but what I would say is the erosion of that is probably the biggest thing that you could attribute to what the Hammer was talking about. When you think about the erosion of young people coming in the game, because that's what you don't get when you don't go to college. You don't get in college. That's where bigs learn how to play in a post. That's where Duncan learned.
I disagree. I don't buy the whole college thing. I don't think you have to go to college to learn how to play basketball in the NBA, because nothing about college basketball prepares you for the NBA. One, you're going to get the NBA caliber player maybe once or twice a season. Most of those guys in college are never going to touch the NBA court. It's like playing against – if you're in high school, you're a high school junior team playing against eighth graders every night, because that's going to get you ready for college. It's not.
What I'm saying is that you have time to work on your fundamentals. There's nowhere in the NBA where you have time to really work on fundamentals that much. There's no place where you.
If you get in the right pro, if you get with the right management system, yes, you can. But even in college, you're not gonna. I don't think you're gonna do that in college. You're not gonna work on the fundamentals. You're gonna work on that.
The catch
at Wisconsin in the swing don't get to work on post moves. They got their big shooting threes.
But look at you're talking about where
college
most of our bigs are based.
It's not about developing individual skill.
I think
college is gonna learn how to play in that coaching system.
What I'm saying is that bigs that have learned over time have learned in college, they've given them practice time, they've worked with them on that. I think that is a place where
they learned in college because they didn't have any other place to learn it. What I'm saying is
I don't think they do a good job of coaching.
Those guys are going to learn how to play the post no matter what. They didn't learn that from their college coach.
No, I think a lot of bigs who come out of college have come out playing. Tim Duncan came out with great fundamentals.
Right, and there are a lot of four-year guys who come out and don't do that nowadays. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, yep, Duncan is the anomaly, but there are tons of four-year guys who come out and don't know how to play the post. How long was Zeller in college for? Tyler Zeller. He was in college for 4 years. Hansbro was in college for 4 years.
Yeah,
but that boy's black is all his house.
Because Zeller not killing it. He's not like he don't know his way around the basket at all down there. He don't
but
look
he
like
ain't
he
Duncan.
Know.
But he ain't Duncan.
Yeah, but I'm saying that. But he wasn't Duncan when he was in college.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say Zeller's more developed than Blake Griffin.
I was already I think he's way more.
Oh, you reach it.
Y'all get caught up with the tip downs. Y'all get caught up with the tip downs.
See, again, they're going to highlight hate. They're going to highlight hate.
Let's bring the hammer back in.
I just only went to school for 2 years. You know how to play in the post.
Yeah, well.
Al Jefferson didn't go to school at all. You know how to play in the post.
Al Jefferson is skilled and blessed. I mean, he came out of Mississippi just bringing it. So, I mean, that's a bad example. He's unique in his
post game. But that's what I'm saying is those guys who have post game would have had the post game whether they went to college or not. And those even guys.
And that was my point earlier was it comes from AAU, brother. It comes from AAU as well. But I'll put it this way. In college, though, you can correct some of the flaws that come from the AAU game and some of the earlier times that it had. But if you only stay in 1 year, then you're definitely not going to be able to work on those skills because all they're trying to do is look pretty for the scouts and get drafted high, like, you know, McLemore and, you know, Zeller and all these other cats that come out early going to do, you know? I mean, it's that simple. So, but like I said, it's not all about college, but college is part of the piece. It's part of the piece. But I agree that fundamentally it starts at AAU and the younger leagues. I think these kids, they just freelance. It's like the kid from Menominee Falls, that J.P. Tokudo guy. All he can do is dunk.
Yep.
And he was one of the top, and he was exposed. He was the number one junior, and they went to him, and he got a great scholarship. I mean, he's an NC, but he got exposed. They're like, all he can do is dunk. And what's he doing? Getting 9 minutes a game, getting some dunks occasionally. He ain't gonna make the NBA. That's somebody.
And that's who he gonna be. And that's who he was gonna be with or without college. He was gonna be that guy.
No, I disagree because I know a little bit of inside information. See, the problem with JP is like JP was put on a pedestal, and JP wasn't bringing as far. You look at his game, man. I mean. He was at the wrong school in Menominee Falls. He should have been at another school. He should have been at a prep school with some real competition. Put the ball on the floor. He's 6'6", 185, playing a 3. Come on, man. He ain't going nowhere.
But what I'm saying is
that's a 1 in some to get.
And what I'm saying is that if he doesn't have that drive, because that's what people don't realize that separates the LeBron James. I say it all the time. LeBron James and Corey Maggette. Both of them are physically gifted. If you look at Corey Maggette, the kid's got a body to play basketball. He was made to be an athlete.
Yeah.
But the difference between LeBron and Corey Maggette is LeBron has the mental framework of, I want to get better every time I step on the court. Corey Maggette doesn't have that. That's why Corey Maggette is
a knucklehead, first of all. I mean, he's a guy flashing gang signs on national TV. And he's embarrassed because of his hometown. And
exactly.
He went to Duke and still was clowning. But yeah, Maggette has star talent, no question about it.
But he doesn't have
LeBron,
the mental makeup.
LeBron had the star drive. You're right, but Maggette could have been a great ball player. Maggette doesn't keep himself in shape. He's not committed on the off season, and he's a knucklehead.
And that's what it boils down to. And that's what it boils down to with these guys. It's not whether you go to college or you don't go to college. It's are you mentally focused on becoming a good basketball player? Because there's a bunch of 4 year guys who don't work out and who aren't good ball players because
But brother Marcus, what happens with the 4 year guys? Let's be real. It's like William Buford's the world. If you stay in school for 4 years, you've been exposed if you're an NBA player because every year they look at you, look at Hardaway. I look at NBADraft.net, and you've probably seen that website religiously, and you see the four players and the four-year players. Every year they start off and they're like lottery picks, and they get exposed. Then they're like going a little bit down, going a little bit further. And they're not going pro for a reason because they're not getting that first round guarantee. They're getting that first round money. So the bottom line, look what happened with Wilmer Buford. Every first year, potential lottery pick. he didn't go because he must have gotten intel he wasn't going to go first round. Second year, he was a potential first round pick. He didn't go. And then you look right now, what happened to William Bruford last draft? Not drafted. Overseas.
Well,
you
first
take
off,
4 years of school, either you've been exposed as a non-NBA. Look at Machado. Everyone's talking about Scott. Remember the kid? Scott Machado.
Part of it is the process. Because part of the process is you have NBADraftNet.com or you have, you know, Draft Express or Chad Ford or whoever you subscribe to as your draft guru. And they make these projections. And Mel Kiper and Tommy Shea do it too. They make these projections of cats and where they're going to be really off their own opinion, not off any necessarily concrete data that they've gathered from GMs.
I can't say it with NBA Draft Net because you have people like Bradley Beal. Nah, that's a good site. Kiper and
But they
Kiper
know, they
and
get
them,
some right.
Kiper
get
and
them,
some
right.
Kiper and them, I got issues with them,
but
nah,
the
NBA
they
Draft
put up
Net
there,
is pretty tight.
Never get picked. Some of the guys they put up there never get picked. And it's like, what made you think he was going to go anyway? Where'd you get that information from?
Yeah, you're right, because they had Jordan Taylor up there. And, you know, God bless
right.
Jordan Taylor. He's getting his money right now. But
right.
you
they're
all
guessing.
Know Jordan has
and
the physical ability for the NBA. He's a good college
they're
player.
Guessing,
that was
they're hypothesizing, they're, you know, projecting. But it's not an exact science. The piece of it that I think
science.
You got to look at
that's
is that
when,
stays,
when Wesley Matthews
doesn't
get drafted,
college, he doesn't get any better and he doesn't improve. Yep, he's going to fall off that board.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what you
but
see is
Wesley
a lot of
Matthews.
Guys come into college and they don't improve.
But look at Wesley Matthews. He was on the draft boards at the end of the second round. He didn't get drafted. It turned out fine for him.
He got an opportunity. The same thing with Jay Crowder. Jay Crowder,
yeah.
I was telling people last year.
But Jay Crowder got drafted.
Though. He's going to figure it out. What I was saying was, if he gets drafted or not, he's going to stick because he can play. And people can
yeah.
see he can play.
Same thing with Jimmy Butler. I mean, we talk about Marquette cats. Jimmy Butler
yeah.
can play. Yeah.
Yeah, but then you look at guys like Alondo Tucker, Brian Butch.
Well, Alondo was, I mean, I love Alondo because I'm a Badger.
He was a system guy.
Alondo was limited, man. Alondo, I'm glad he got a guaranteed deal. I'm glad he went first round. You know, he got his guaranteed
yeah.
money.
I mean, good for him, but those guys are system guys. They're not in the college system, and it's about coaching. And Marquette, they prepare guys to be pros.
Yeah.
But I would say
at
that's
UW,
always
they don't.
But I would always say
that. You told me Devin Harris wasn't prepared? Come on, man. You told me Lou wasn't
Devin
prepared?
Harris played under – Devin Harris was under Bo for like a minute.
Yeah, but Devin Harris
was
still
– That was almost
10
years ago.
They
ain't got nobody since then? They ain't got nobody since then?
Yeah, well, I don't think they've had anybody that's talented since then because Devin was a diamond in the rough. They got Devin, man. Devin should have gone to Kentucky or something like that, but he didn't get his props. He was in Tulsa East.
And you're right. And that proves my point. It wasn't about going to college for him. He could have went wherever. He was a ball player. He was a great ball player.
Yeah, but they weren't. But the other teams
weren't.
And if
you're not a great ball player, going to Wisconsin is not going
to
make you a better ball player.
I disagree. I think I saw Lure come in, man, sweating wet at 180, and he's an NBA ball player now. I can't say that, man. I mean, I think Alondo did
and
play
I think
a little.
I saw him come in, and I actually played against him. And I thought, there's no way he should make the league. Marcus Landry should have made the league.
Marcus did make the league. Marcus was in the league.
He made the league, but he didn't stay in the league.
Well,
he
Marcus is a tweener, man.
And he needed to develop to be in the league.
Marcus, I mean, the problem is Marcus Landry trying to play like Carl. He ain't got Carl's beef. Carl got beef. He's got his great skill. Carl's a better. Marcus is trying to play that four position. He's a three. Good body. He ain't going to be able to do it, man.
You know why he got to play the four? Because he didn't get to play on the perimeter at UW.
I would say this. Let me say this. I'm going to say this, and then we're going to go to this commercial break.
Look at Steve, man.
Wait, Devon. Yes, Steve, perfect. This dude didn't even play on the bowl. Why? Because he wouldn't buy in the bowl system. What happened?
Yeah.
Got him to the league.
Yeah, well,
he got to the league.
The funky editorial. I love it. I'm going to say this. This was a great concept because it's paying off. if you are a listener and you want to get on it, you want to get into the pit, you got to go to us on Facebook, post that you want to be in the next Funky editorial. The Hammer is bringing it. Y'all going at it. I don't know where we're gonna go from here. We're gonna take this.
We're gonna go number up, brother. That's like we do.
We gonna do this. We're gonna take
a shot.
We
go number up, like Obama. Number up.
I'm gonna take a little longer break, but we're gonna take a few minute break. We're gonna drop some music here really quick for about 2.5 minutes. We're gonna come back and hit it tough here down the stretch. So we'll be back in a little bit. Listen up.
You're listening to The Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, brought to you by Resistance Digital Solutions.
LL Cool J is hot as hell. Can we talk right now? Or?
You're listening to The Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, brought to you by Resistance Digital Solutions. You're listening to The Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, brought to you by Resistance Digital Solutions.
All right, back in the building. Take it on, game changer.
All right. So we've gone back to our corners. Our cut man have hooked us up. You know, got the Vaseline on. We're coming back out. This time around, we're going to talk about the NFL. In particular, we're going to start out talking about the recent coaching hires. In particular, the Rooney Rule and how it seems to have been ignored a little bit.
They've been bastardized. They've been ignored. They did the Rooney Rule, but. They did it in the worst way. You had Keith Armstrong. Come on, man. Keith Armstrong ain't no head coach.
So what you're saying, Hammer, they did the Rooney Rule. But they went and grabbed like the janitor and was like, yo, man, you a coaching candidate. Come here for a second.
That's Keith Armstrong. He's a janitor in the NFL. You're right. A raggedy special teams coach. Don't talk about he's a head coach.
I'm
going to
go ahead and let you jump in real quick, Hammer, because you got some feelings about this.
The bottom line of the Rooney Rule is like, I mean, for all your Mike Tomlins and your Romeo Crennels, they bastardized the rule this year. It's just real talk. I mean, they've shown the bastardization of the rule for the past several years where – they hire these brothers on the interim. They're already in the Rooney Rule pick, and then they hire who they want to hire. And they hire Malarkey, and then Malarkey got fired after 1 year. And then Mel Tucker now, you know, is on my team, unfortunately, or my ex-team, I should say, because I ain't down with Trestman, the quarterback coach, being masquerading as a coach. But the Rooney Rule, again, the, you know, being someone in diversity in higher ed, it's shameless how they bastardized the Rooney Rule this year. I mean, and they bastardized it in several ways because there were not, first of all, there weren't any good candidates, there weren't great candidates up there. The best minority candidate is from my alma mater, my cohort too, D. Shaw. D. Shaw should be an NFL coach, but D. Shaw is stupid. He's at his alma mater. They bringing it. They won a Rose Bowl against my Badgers, unfortunately. But the bottom line is that he was the hottest black coach out there. Sumlin, too. He's hot. When they get on the market, teams will be jumping up and down. But come on. Mel Tucker? Come on. Ray Horton and corn rolled up? Come on. You going to take somebody corn rolled up as your coach? Come on, man. Well, he going to have a press conference, man, with corn rolled up? I mean, come on, man. Are you serious? And these other cats, they were using.
Be a dog.
And they were using.
No
I mean, come on, man.
No
they were using. I mean, Ray Horton's a good defensive coordinator, but if you want to be head coach, homie, you better cut those corn rolls off, dog. Ain't nobody going to hire you. You know, Al Davis is dead, so forget about that. He ain't hiring you. So he might do that mess. But like I said, with the Rooney Rule, what they need to do is they need to hit the pipeline, too, as far as these assistant coaches go. There ain't enough offensive coordinators. You know, like Jim Caldwell should have gotten a holler, but he didn't because he wasn't the OC at the end of the year. He's in the Super Bowl now. I think he'll be back in the mix. We're going to get some players back in the mix, but – but they gotta have a stronger Rooney Rule that goes lower with the assistant coaches, with you know, in the college level too as well needs a Rooney Rule, because look at the dirt to black. I mean, you have some good hires like Hazel and you know, other brothers, but the bottom line is that I mean, it just can't. You can't just have a Rooney Rule at one top level and not have a pipeline for all the levels involved. And that was the thing about it, but you know. And again, Lovie Smith getting fired was a shame, but my man Emery wants to be the King Kong of Chicago, and my prediction is that he'll be on Black Monday gone with Trestman after a year. So, you know.
And what I would say, I was concerned even more so in the coaching position were the GM positions and getting into some more decision-making people. I agree with you about the assistant coach stuff, but – we also need to be grooming some executives. And you can't tell me you can't find folks who can be executives.
And you so can, that and, they weren't, and they were hired. Yeah. Jimmy Ray Jr. should have been hired. He wasn't hired. I don't think it was Rod Graves got thrown under the bus because of the Kevin Cobb mess and Lindley. And, I mean, that was an unmitigated disaster up in Arizona last year. But literally, like, they should have got me to go. I was a quarterback for them for minimum. You know, because they had nothing. They had, I mean, like Mike and Mike broke it down. That's the worst quarterback play in NFL history. And I ain't talking about Tebow. They worse than Tebow. So, I mean, the bottom line is that you're right. At the GM level, they need decisions making too. But you got your Ozzie Newsoms of the world. You got your Raleigh McKenzie's, man. Both are doing their GM things, but. You know, again, Rod Graves, I got a lot of respect for, came out of Chicago Pipeline, took it to the chin because they made a lot of bad decisions last year. When your best player is basically unusable because the position that gets him the ball is so incompetent, and I'm talking about Larry Fitzgerald, obviously, you got a problem. They threw that brother over the bus. Forget about under the bus. And so, you know, and he should have been because, again, you know, I don't know what they saw in Ryan Lindley. Maybe they had Stevie Wonder scouting him the day they brought him to San Jose San Diego State because I'm sorry, man, but my little cousin can look at that dude. That dude can't play. Can't play at all. And having him masquerade out there as a quarterback, man, please. I was just like, are you serious? I mean, 7 of 30 for like 89 yards? I saw a game – in the sports bar, I go to a spot in Madison. I give him a shout out, Stadium Bar, man. That's my spot. So don't close it down, please. But the bottom line is, they went there, saw that game, man. Horrific. But yeah, you're right, D. Will. They need a pipeline at every single position in the NFL. They need these internship programs at the NFL level, and then we'll be able to get more diversity. But the pool was just horrific this year. I mean, someone could have come in. Yeah, I would love to see someone with my Bears instead of this failed offensive coordinator at NC State masquerading as a quarterback coach. Now coaching my Bears is horrific. I hope they go 0-16 this year, dog. Real talk. 0-16. I'll be cheering every time because I want to see Emery and Tressman go down. Ain't no way they let a brother man that was fired as OC of NC State, and you gonna try to tell me he's a quarterback guru in a subpar league with a 110 yard football field? Are you serious? Are you serious? And you know, all these people talking about he's an offensive genius. Are you serious? Are you serious?
Hey.
We're 11-7 in the CFL. Lovie went 10-6. My math serves me right. Lovie had a better record than Tressman. And look what happened, man. Lovie gets fired because basically me and Emery's boy, so they all going down next year. They all going down. And Gabe Kareemi, man, can't block you or me. It's horrific. He's embarrassing my alma mater. Embarrassing my alma mater, man. He can't block you or me. Plain and simple, man.
Game changer.
300 pounds of nothingness. 300 pounds of nothingness with a bum knee to Angelo pick. That's the nerve. They had nerve to interview him with the Jets. Are you serious? This guy picking people like Chris Williams with a bum back, Kareemi with a bum knee. I mean, come on, man. Come on, man. He's a finalist for what, man? Please, the bum of the year? Are you serious?
Are you serious, man?
That's the top. But nah, again, with the NFL and like I said, brothers, we gonna have some. Got some good brothers down the road, the D-Shaws. I mean, D-Shaw didn't want to take his, I don't blame him. He got a nice thing at Stanford. He got a young family, but I'm sorry, man. I get that NFL money. You can always go back to college. Look at Saban, you know. Look at these cats. Look at Ron Turner got him a job. Are you serious? He got him a job at Florida National, so. You can always go back to the college game.
Now I would say this, Hap. You dropped it for us. Today, we were coming in on our 2-minute warning that I definitely have to have you back at the second funky editorial.
I'll be glad to come back and speak real talk from the south side of Chicago. You know what I'm saying?
This is what I'm talking about. We got longtime listeners. Hamp has been one of those. He's been dedicated to us, supporting us for a long time. You know, if you're a longtime listener and you want to come in on this show, I invite you to get on us. Hit us up on Facebook, Real Sports Guys Radio. You can find us on Facebook and let us know that you'd like to come on the Funky Editorial. We'll inbox you, contact you, and have you come on the show with us. But if you bring it, my boy Hap set the bar high for feature guests on the Funky Editorial. This is where people who listen for a long time, who hit us up on Facebook, who we talk offline with, who give us feedback, allow for us to really engage them in a lot of stuff we got to do. It's been good. We are moving towards the end on this. Our first edition.
That Biggie Smalls, I like it. I like it. That Biggie Smalls, I like it.
Yes, right. The Funky Editorial Extended. This is where we go deep into the topic. We nailed it. We said we're going to be free-flowing. The energy was off the hook. I'm having a great time with it. The Game Changer was good. He was on, as usual.
He was amazing, man. Thanks a lot, Marcus. Great Game Changer. Brought it.
He was on it, as usual. And, you know, we're about to take it home with the people. And I want to thank Resistance Digital and our man over there. Make sure y'all check him out. Hit us up on realsportsguys.com. You can connect with us on Twitter, Facebook from there. That's the central. The PhD, our guy who will be here tomorrow night, we will have an incredible show.